Hello. Oh my gosh. Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and mute because there's so many of us, and this is just awesome. I'm really excited to have you here. And I'm here with Adrienne Dworak, who's our Vice President of Sales and Marketing. And she and I have been cooking up a new way of introducing folks to what we do in the Queen's Code workshop. And tonight is the debut of this new thing we've been cooking up. And I hope you enjoy it. I hope it serves you well. I hope it clears up some of the confusion and suffering that you have in your relationships. And I'll just be really straight about it. It'll probably leave you with a problem because it will clarify the point of the curriculum that we offer in the first place. And it may leave you with a profound desire to participate in our curriculum if you haven't done before. And at the very least, read the Queen's Code book. So I'm going to dive right into this, and I believe I've organized myself in such a way as to have space for questions, but since we have never done this one before, I can't guarantee that because I'm really committed to getting this information in your hands. So let me begin by expressing to you the way in which we think about human beings here at PAX, and because it's critical to the construct that we're using, and I use the word construct on purpose because we have no way of knowing that what we're speaking about is the truth, except for that old saying, "The proof is in the pudding." So we have over 25,000 graduates who rave about the quality of our information and how much it's helped them in their personal relationships, in their families, with their children, in their workplace, in their careers. And so we really believe that the validity is in the resonance in your own life and the effectiveness in your own life. But what I've strived to do since I started studying men in 1991 is to create ways of understanding men and women and human beings that give us access to the results that we want, give us access to more joy and satisfaction and partnership and contribution and empowerment, and dramatically, if not entirely, reduce suffering and pain and dishonor and disrespect and hurt. So that's really what it's about, and it's another way of saying it is it's about getting more of what you need with a whole lot less effort. So the first piece of what we're talking about tonight in hunters and gatherers with conflicting intentions is, first I want you to know what I mean by hunters and gatherers in the first place. So by studying men and women since 1991, I've come to understand human beings as a duality of human spirit and human animal. So it's present actually in our nervous systems. We have two different nervous systems, a human spirit or parasympathetic nervous system and a human animal nervous system, a sympathetic nervous system. And every time you're compelled to take a deep breath, right, to take a deep breath and calm yourself down, you're actually switching from the human animal nervous system to the human spirit nervous system. So another way to describe this is human spirit is that quality of consciousness and choice and thoughtfulness and consideration and being able to act in ways that may require courage or compassion or generosity. So acting in ways that are contrary to even what we're compelled to do. We actually decide to do it. We're determined to do it. We bring ourselves to it. So the goodies in life are all expressions of human spirit, love and joy and generosity and happiness and compassion. I could go on and on, all those things that make life sweet and rich and beautiful, and the same with our relationships and our families. These are expressions of human spirit. And human animal is the instinctive side of human beings. And one of the definitions in the dictionary for instinct is a primal biological urge impelling a response which brings relief of tension. So biological, literally hormonal, primal as in a first response, and driving a response which brings relief of tension. So you can tell when your human animal, what we call your caveman or cavewoman within, has been activated by experiencing tension. When you experience tension, you'll be compelled to behave in an instinctive manner. And we experience tension when we perceive a threat. So instinct is all about keeping you alive. It's all about your survival and the survival of your tribe and your genes, your genetic material. And when we perceive a threat to that, it activates that whole system and causes us to behave in particular ways. So hunters and gatherers are actually two versions of the systems that get activated when we're an instinctive behavior. So one way to think about it is as two different modes, if you want, although that seems like a mild word, but they're literally operating systems. So they have hunters and gatherers have completely different ways of not only thinking and receiving information and processing information and different ways of speaking and listening. Hunters and gatherers actually have different vision. So there's a huge physical component of eyesight and hearing, and it's tremendous how much it affects us. So what we're going to do tonight is talk about hunters and gatherers and the way that those systems work give us conflicting intentions. And those conflicting intentions can cause an enormous amount of frustration, not only between hunters and gatherers, but between hunters and hunters and gatherers and gatherers. It can cause frustration. It can cause a sense of being disrespected or dishonored. It can cause hurt feelings. It can cause crises in experiencing being safe. It can completely disrupt partnership and the possibility of being in partnership. So, and it mostly does this not because hunters and gatherers are innately incompatible. The differences between these two different operating systems, the reason why they cause problems is because we're not aware of the differences, because we don't acknowledge the differences, because we don't pay attention to that operating system requires something different than I might naturally be providing. And one way I like to think about it is imagine if you had a Mac and a PC and they were having a relationship and they look down at their keyboards and their keyboards look mostly alike. There's a funny couple interesting different keys that one has and the other has, but mostly it looks alike and we assume we're speaking the same language and that we're being heard the same way that we're speaking. And what we're hearing is actually what was said, but it gets lost. It gets lost in the translation between those two different operating systems. So the problem is not that there's different operating systems. I mean, if you just take a Mac and a PC, each of them provide enormous possibilities and are effective in very different ways. So there's nothing wrong with either operating system. It's the frustration will show up in thinking they're communicating with each other when they actually aren't. And that's what happens a lot between hunters and gatherers. Now, you might notice I'm not saying men and women. I'm saying hunters and gatherers, and there's a reason for that, and that is that both men and women can be in the operating state of a hunter or of a gatherer. And many years ago, I think caveman and cavewoman would be fair, maybe more recently in human history, there was more of a division where you would, and you'll see this actually in primitive societies, that in hunter-gatherer societies, there's a huge division where women won't be allowed to hunt and men would be ashamed to be caught gathering. So there can be a lot of prejudices about hunters and gatherers and that it belongs in a particular gender, but we have definitely proven in the first world that that's not true. And we're at the stage right now where most women spend more time in a hunter mode than they do in a gatherer mode. And so it becomes even more critical that we understand the differences between these two, to even to get along with ourselves. Many women are just in a state of upset because they have these conflicting modes occurring within themselves. So I'm going to start with the gatherer and give you an overview of not all of the characteristics of a gatherer. We don't have time for that. We have something like, 20 characteristics for each one of these categories of hunter and gatherer. So I'm just going to give you a few of them that will get at what we're talking about tonight about conflicting intentions. And so we'll talk about the gatherer first, and then we're going to talk about the hunter, and the problems will start to make themselves really clear as we look at those differences. And again, I invite you, whether you're a man or a woman, to just have space for that you can be both a hunter and a gatherer, and notice in what situations you are in a hunter mode versus a gatherer mode, in around what people, because we have an effect on each other that way, and also throughout your life. Hunting and gathering is affected by hormones. And as our hormones fluctuate throughout our lives and throughout our menstrual cycles as women, we're going to be more prone to hunt or gather and find the mentality of one or the other to be more comfortable at home. But we can be both, and we can even switch back and forth between them. Actually caused myself a couple weeks ago to shift from a hunter mentality to a gatherer mentality in order to affect the behavior that I wanted from myself with a lot less effort. I caused myself to shift operating systems. It was really fun, and if I have time to tell you about it, I will. So let's start with gatherers, and the first thing I want everybody to remember about this is both the purpose of hunters and gatherers is to survive. So there is it affects the way that we approach sex or procreation, and they're both very strong elements of protection and providing. So there's procreate, protect, and provide. The fundamental instincts of all living organisms are well at work with both of these, and including the tremendous energy that comes with that this is about survival. So a tremendous amount of tension can be generated, and the reaction can be huge. The huge blow-ups, huge withdrawals, huge emotional responses, which are all consistent with that it seems as if our lives depend upon this. So the first thing I want to talk about is the kind of attention that gatherers have. And then I'll talk about, given that attention, what do gatherers notice? And because of that kind of attention and what gatherers notice, what occurs as actionable? So that's a really important thing to pay attention to when you're dealing with differences in human beings, is what seems actionable to one person versus another, because that's where a lot of upset happens, where one person like, this is critical, we need to do this now, and the other person is going, do what? I don't see anything. So the kind of attention we have determines what we notice, and what we notice has a huge effect on what seems actionable to us seems to be urgent in requiring action and important and worthwhile in acting on. So the term that we use for the attention of a gatherer is the term diffuse awareness. And diffuse means to pour in every direction. So something you just may want to be remembering now or tapping into now, or if that seems unfamiliar to you, then that's fine. It may just mean you spend most or all of your time in a hunter mode. But you want to reach out and try to understand diffuse awareness because it is very real and has a huge impact on our lives because it is the kind of attention that a gatherer has. And diffuse awareness, as I said, diffuse means to pour in every direction. And diffuse awareness is critical to the survival and the success of a gatherer. So imagine, if you would, that you are out in a meadow. Okay, imagine a meadow. And in this meadow, there are berry bushes, right, which actually are very high in a lot of nutrients. And the bears in Alaska depend on them to fatten up for the winter and survive the winter. So you've got all different kinds of berries, different kinds of greens, right, which have all these nutrients and detoxify. You've got herbs that have antioxidants and antivirals and antifungals and antimicrobials and anti-inflammatories. They have all these things that are critical to our health and well-being. And then you've got things that are useful. You know, you could burn that, or you could make something out of that. So you're, you know, going to have grasses and sticks and stones and medicinals amongst all of these. And then you also are going to have critters. You're going to have competition for this food and nutrition, and you're going to have critters that could be dangerous to you, that being bitten by that critter or scratched by that critter could cause you to be lame, for example, and not be able to escape bigger critters, or cause you to come down with an illness, get an infection, and it festers, and you could lose your life. So the meadow is both a huge opportunity and a threatening place, a dangerous place. And you may be out in that meadow with other gatherers. In fact, you're very likely to be out in that meadow with other gatherers. You're going to be compelled to take someone with you because your diffuse awareness protects each other. And just, for example, a bear, right? When a bear approaches, the thing you're supposed to do is collect yourself together with all your tribal members and make yourself as big as possible to scare away the bear. So in addition to your feather gatherers and these threats and these possibilities and opportunities and all these things that are needed for your survival, you may also have your children with you. And your children may have become mobile. They're no longer content to be strapped to your back or your front. So if you start to picture this, you can start to get why diffuse awareness is of critical importance. That if you can only look at one thing at a time, if you're only focused at one thing at a time, if you have a tunnel kind of vision or a narrow kind of vision, you're actually going to be in jeopardy. That you need to be able to see everything around you. You actually need things to pop out at you, something that's ripe. You need it to pop out at you, useful to pop out at you. Something out of place, like, wait a second, why is that like that? Maybe a critter made a den over there. So out of place is going to be something that's like, oh, that's very bad. Things out of place, you got to investigate that. So the diffuse awareness has this really, really important survival function for the gatherer in creating the conscious awareness, the showing up as do something about me that would be necessary to survive and prosper out in the meadow as a gatherer. So I'm hoping you're tapping into this picture that I'm painting for you, and you're seeing it for yourself, And then what I'd like you to do, if you can do that, is just now map it onto your life now. That our environments have changed a lot, our circumstances have changed a lot, but our instincts have not changed very much at all. And as a gatherer, to the degree that you experience being a gatherer, you have that same diffuse awareness. Being in your own home, being in your office, being in the favorite places that you go, traveling through any environment, even driving on the freeway, you have the same awareness. You have an amazing peripheral vision that is looking for threats, for example, and opportunities. And out of the corner of your eye, you might see a fruit stand, a store, a meadow. I want to be there. Or that corner of your eye, you may see something coming at you fast. And it looks like it's going to get you. And you realize, oh, no, that was my husband changing lanes. But it looks like that other car was going to kill me because our vision is not up to date with the speed at which we can travel now. So what diffuse awareness causes us to notice, and again, just check into how this is for you, is it causes us to notice the physical, mental, and emotional states of everything in our environment. It causes us to notice the physical, mental, and emotional states of everything in our environment. So our vision, our hearing, our perception of body language, extremely sensitive. This has actually been well-tested and well-validated. And so we're going to notice the physical. We're going to notice what's dirty, what's beautiful, what's messy, cluttered, and what doesn't belong there. We're going to notice what's out of place as much in our physical environments as we would if we were that out in the meadow looking for, you know, where have they rearranged something that critters in the meadow and created a danger or an opportunity. The mental states. So we're very sensitive to the mental and emotional states of everything in our environment. But, you know, we can tell when our dog is bummed. Like, we're sensitive to our dog is bummed, is in a bad mood, or our husband is frustrated, or our teenage son is in a constant state of angst and discomfiture and frustration being at home, which is a typical state for teenage men. So just start to become aware for yourself right now. Just think about how much you notice. And even while you're on the call, if you can, you know, walk through your living room and notice how much you notice. Notice what pops out at you. And, you know, is there a crooked pillow you have to go straighten? Is your bed unmade and so you don't want to be in your bedroom? And this, now we're getting into the area of what becomes actionable. Because of noticing the physical, mental, and emotional states of everything and everybody, that is what causes what's actionable to us. So we're gonna be called to do something about, or maybe berate ourselves for not having already done something about the things that we see that are ugly, that are dirty, that are crooked. Think of how hard it is for you to be someplace where there's a crooked picture or a crooked mirror. Do you have to fix it? Are you compelled to go over and straighten it? Do you have to control yourself to not straighten it? Do you feel tense that it's crooked and nobody's fixed it? That is instinct, that tension that we feel when something is ugly or dirty or crooked or out of place. Something I like to do to provoke women especially is I'll just throw things on the floor. Just toss a bunch of stuff on the floor and watch them start squirming. They get all tense. They get really tense and they want to pick it up. And it's so hard just to let it be there. And you might map this onto if you have someone in your life who leaves socks on the floor or clothing on the floor. How much does that agitate you? How much does that activate your instinct that you have to do something about it? It also just something that just might not feel right in the environment. Like, if you really tap into this, you might notice that you don't like arrangements of furniture, for example, that blocks your field of vision. that actually makes you not be able to see the approach of things from far enough away to act. So again, we're talking about instinct. We're talking about very, very primitive reactions that are going to happen. They happen very, very quickly. And if you notice them, if you understand them, if you understand where they come from, then you can actually make a choice, right? You can take that deep breath. All right, so the picture's crooked. Is that really a threat to my survival? Could I just let it be crooked? Is any bad thing going to happen really, really because of that? Could I just let it be and make a conscious choice to let it be there, to let it be like that, and switch from the human-animal instinct that's creating all that tension into human spirit and making a choice about how you spend your time and energy? Okay, so having painted a picture of the gatherer, and again, just notice how much you relate to that, and look at the situations. In what situations are you in a gatherer mode, and do you have the kind of attention that I'm talking about, and notice the things I'm talking about, and are called into action by the kinds of things that I'm talking about, and just notice. Notice how it is for you. That's the only point right now. And you can giggle if you want, and it might explain to you some of the things that happen in your life. And then we're going to take the other side. And as we talk about the other side, as we talk about the hunter operating system, the conflicts will start to show up, and the conflicting intentions will start to show up, and the common frustrations and really big upsets that we can have between these two operating systems. And again, that can happen just with you and yourself. So the hunter, again, like the gatherer, it's about survival. So there's a procreate expression, and there's protecting and there's providing going on. But the hunter has a completely different kind of attention. And near as we can tell, these two different kinds of attention are very much created and affected by testosterone and estrogen. And that's why we can change throughout our lives. Periods where we have more or less testosterone, more or less estrogen will affect our attention. And, for example, I'm postmenopausal, and so I have less estrogen than I had when I was younger. And so the hunter operating system is much more accessible to me than it was like when I was in my 20s, when my diffuse awareness was at its prime. And the reverse can also be true. My friends have commented that where I live now in the country, I am much more of a gatherer than I was when I lived in the city. I have more diffuse awareness than I did. So it's very interesting how it can be affected hormonally, circumstantially, even the person that you're around, as I said in the beginning. So the hunter's attention is what we call single focus. And if you want to, take your hands and put them up on either side of your eyes and create like blinders, if you will, and just notice what happens to your field of vision. Notice what happens to what it is that you can see and what you can consider. And you might think, oh, this is terrible, right? Like, oh, gosh, I would hate to have myself limited that way. But it actually also has a tremendous benefit, because the hunter operating system with the attention of single focus it's single focused on a result. There's a focus on a result, on an outcome, on a difference being made, on an impact. So these are all words that you want to associate with the hunter. So the hunter is about a result, an impact, an effect, an outcome, a difference being made. So start to imagine, if you will, being committed to protecting, committed to providing, right? Not beyond committed, completely compelled. That's what instinct does. And approaching it one result at a time, one accomplishment at a time. So it's a very committed way of being, and we'll talk more about that in a different introduction. But it is focused on one result at a time. Now, what this does, this kind of attention, this single focus, what it does is it affects the noticing. It affects what the hunter notices. So what the hunter notices is everything that is relevant to that result. That's what the hunter notices. So the hunter will notice. Let's go caveman if you like, or cavewoman, because cavewoman could hunt too, right? So that focus of hunting would have pop out at the hunter everything relevant to whatever they've committed themselves to. So if they've committed to going out and catching dinner, catching more than dinner, they got to save for the winter, right? So the hunter goes out committed to bringing home big game, you know, let's say a giant antelope. So the hunter's out there in the field, in the pasture, in the forest. Giant antelope didn't hang out in the forest. They get caught in the trees. So it's going to be prairie and grasses. And what's going to be noticed, what's going to jump out at the hunter, are the signs that a giant antelope has been here. So the footprints, the grass being bent at a certain height, markings on trees, things being knocked over in a certain way, a certain volume of habitation having been eaten, right? So these things are going to jump out. So things that are relevant to that intention to bring home some big game. So it doesn't mean that the hunter doesn't see the little bunny rabbit droppings. He sees them, but it doesn't occur as actionable. It's just information. It's information literally for later. For when he's after a bunny rabbit, he'll remember, oh yeah, I saw that scat over there. There's probably a nest. I should go check that out. But it's not actionable. And that's the thing to really understand, that the attention of single focus causes the hunter to notice everything that's relevant to that result. But there's a back of the hand of that. It also, the single focus screens out everything that's irrelevant to that result. So an experience that you might have had interacting with a hunter or being a hunter yourself is you might feel tuned out by a hunter. You might feel tuned out by them, like they're not listening to me, they're ignoring me, they tuned me out. No, they didn't. The act of committing themselves to producing that result actually framed their brain to do that, caused their brain to do that. So, and you may tap into that yourself, experience times when you're completely like, wow, where did the time go? And, oh my gosh, when did you get here? When did you come in? How long have you been home? Like, that it doesn't even, we can be so effective at screening out that it doesn't even register. And then there's other things that do register, but they don't register as actionable. And that's what's really important to understand, is that what's actionable to the hunter is, first of all, everything that's relevant to the result, like I've already said. Second of all, that it's worth it. So this is something that happens, and it's a big distinction between hunters and gatherers. Because let's say that the hunter's going after the giant antelope, and it sees giant antelope hoof prints, but they're little tiny giant antelope hoof prints. So we don't have a giant antelope. We've got a little giant antelope. Okay, well, what will it take to track that down, kill it, and haul it home? Not worth it. The time it will take, the energy that it will take, the effort it will take, the risk that it will take, not worth it. So So that's something that can happen even while a hunter is producing a result. In the process of producing the result, they can conclude it's not actually worth it. So they will have committed themselves to something, and as it's evolving what it takes to produce the result, the conclusion can be that it's not worth it. And this is also a survival response. The conclusion is that I will spend more calories producing that result than the number of calories that result will return to me. I'll spend more calories chasing down that deer than eating that deer will give back to me. And that's how you die. That's how you don't survive. You spend more calories than you're taking in. You'll literally starve to death. And so an inherent function of instinct is paying attention to that. But there's something that's interesting that happens, and that is that while the gatherer has the same concern, the diffuse awareness makes way more things actionable. It can make everything worth actionable. And this is an interesting thing that comes in because of the screening out of single focus. Being single focus is actually a pretty peaceful state. You're just paying attention to what you're paying attention to, and everything else is automatically screened out. And it takes a lot for something to penetrate that single focus, and I'll come back and talk about that. But being a gatherer with diffuse awareness, it's not a peaceful state. It's a state of interruption. It's a state of constant demand. It's a state of do me, no, do me, no, I'm crooked, no, I'm ugly, no, I'm dirty, no, I'm out of place, no, I'm blocking the view. So everything's talking to the gatherer that we got to do something about it. And this is what makes everything actionable. Because when it's done, it literally stops talking. When it's done, it literally stops jumping out at us. It stops attracting our attention and demanding our attention. So you straighten the pillow, and then the pillow's just quiet. The pillow's just there. You straighten the picture, and then you're at peace. You pick the thing up off the floor. There's peace. You scooch that chair a little bit over. You're at peace. So it produces literally a relief of tension. So the relief of tension that the gatherer experiences is from all those things being done. The relief of tension that the hunter experiences is from accomplishing that result and it having been worth it. So as you can see, there's two very different things happening. The intention and intentionality of the hunter and gatherer are going to be really different. For the gatherer to get everything done, for the hunter to get one thing done. And I hope this is now opening up for you what happens when we try to interact with each other. So, for example, when you have hunters interacting with each other, but they're not aligned on what the one thing is. They have different one things. So you can get in an argument about which one thing is important and which one thing is worth it, right? When you have gatherers interacting with each other, it's pretty funny. There can be a kind of cooperation where, okay, you shut that thing up and I'll shut this thing up. But you can even have conflicts there. You can have conflicts in communication. Because if you think of the gatherer in the meadow, one of the obligations of a gatherer in the meadow is to talk in order to scare away the critters. And we actually were trained in this when I was in Alaska out amongst the grizzly bears to make sure that somebody always kept up talking in order to scare away the critters. It just cracked me up given what I've studied, you know. So then let's try to put this together, right? So you have a hunter committed to accomplishing one thing, and you have a gatherer committed to accomplishing everything. And so the gatherer will try to get the hunter to do some of the everything that they see needs to get done. Do something, right? But the hunter might be planning how to accomplish one thing. And when hunters are planning, they don't look like they're doing anything. They look like they're just sitting there. They're just, what are you doing? They don't look like they're doing anything. And someone not doing anything looks like someone who should be used to do something, because there's so many things that need to be done. So what are you, come on, come help me with this. Come do this. Do anything. And the hunter's like, what? He doesn't even hear it because he's concentrated. He or she, this happens to me too, focused on solving that problem, focused on making that plan, focused on figuring out how to produce that one result. And they don't hear the wife going, honey, can you help me with this? It's screened out because that this is irrelevant to the hunter's this. So this is what we mean by conflicting intentions. And it sets up really the problem that we have in interacting with each other. You know, how do you cause a gatherer to calm down and do one thing? And how do you cause a hunter to invest themselves in the things that really would make a difference that you got done? So that's the real issue that is presented by hunters and gatherers, is how do you have what's actionable to you become actionable to them? So that's the real core issue. How do you have it be actionable to them? And that's one of the things that we've been able to make the biggest impact in our curriculum since we first offered the Celebrating Men, Satisfying Women workshop in 1995. It's now the Queen's Code workshop. It's evolved into the Queen's Code. And both the secret code of understanding men who are predominantly hunters and getting what you need from men with less effort. And also honoring men, a code of honor, of honoring ourselves and honoring men, so being committed to empowerment instead of disempowerment. But that's one of the things we've been able to make the biggest difference in, because we have discovered how something becomes actionable to the hunter. And one of the things that has something become actionable to a hunter is that return on investment. What makes something worth it to a hunter? He's gonna do one thing at a time. What makes the thing that you need worth being the one thing he's doing now? So there's different aspects of that, and those are things that we've distinguished and what we teach in the Queen's Code workshop. Another thing that we've been able to distinguish is that there's a particular language. There are particular words that actually communicate effectively into the operating system of a hunter. And strangely enough, most women avoid using all of the words. It's just the strangest thing. We actually avoid using those words. I'll give you an example. You can use this immediately. So one of the words that has something occur actionable in a hunter's mentality, attention span, focus, orientation, is the word problem. They're organized around solving problems. It's one of the things that they're committed to providing. They're compelled to provide solutions to problems. So having something worth doing to a man, one of the words involved is, I have a problem. What? What? Talk about getting attention. That shows up as, that's relevant. The person I love has a problem? I have a problem. Really? What problem? And they want to hear about the problem and analyze the problem and come up with solutions to the problem. It may take them a while to solve that problem, but they're going to solve that problem. Now, interestingly enough, most women avoid using the word problem. We rarely say, I have a problem. We say, we might say, you're the problem. But we don't say, I have a problem. We say, I have a concern. I have an issue. We have a challenge. We actually avoid the word problem. And if you wanted to just test out, if you're not familiar with our information or the difference it makes, just test this out in your life for a few days. Just test it out. I have a problem. Saying to a man or a woman in hunter mode, you can tell because she's focused, I have a problem. Or we have a problem. Or there's a problem showing up here. Just try using the word problem. And notice how much tension it creates in you to say the word problem. It's actually counter-instinctual for gatherers to say the word problem. And see if you can, by human spirit, overcome that tension and use the word and notice the impact it has. Okay, so I would love to take some questions. Yay, it appears we do have some time for it. But before we do that, Adrian, if you would actually tell them about the offer that we have tonight to help them, if we've just created a problem of a desire for them to participate in our curriculum, how they can do that with a significant discount and really cool bonuses. Would you tell them about that?
Sure. We want to share our world with you, and we have a very special opportunity for you tonight. The regular tuition of the Queen's Code Workshop is $849. And you get $124 off when you register with promo code AA-715. And that can be lowercase or uppercase. A as in Allison, A as in Armstrong, -715, which will make the price only $725 when you pay in full. Now, we also have a payment plan because we don't want money to stop you in getting what you need and what makes you happy. Now, with the payment plan, you still get $124 off, and it comes off your first payment, making your first payment only $1. Then you make 6 more monthly payments of only $125 for a total of $751. So that includes a $25 payment plan administration fee. Now, the way the payment plan works is that it's not layaway, so you don't have to make all of your payments before you do the workshop. So you can actually make one payment of only $1, and you can be in our San Francisco workshop next weekend. And we also have $261 worth of free bonuses if you register. And we want to prepare you so you get the most out of the workshop. So when you register, you get immediate access to an audio recording of Allison's most recently created workshop called Loving More by Sacrificing Less, which is normally $89, and you get that for free. And you'll learn how to stop wasting your energy on things men don't care about and gain more time and energy to spend on you. And we have more bonuses to support you after the workshop. So you will also receive 3 more hours of live teleclasses, normally $125, but you'll get them for free. And you'll learn advanced material and have an opportunity to ask questions. And the titles of the teleclasses are How to Change a Man. Number 2 is
popular 1 hour, yes, How to Change a Man.
Yes. Number 2 is Bringing Out the Best in Men. And number 3 And number 3 is You Win When He Wins. And I love these because I can put the recordings on my phone and listen to them whenever I want as a refresher. And we have another bonus to support you after the workshop. And you get a private one-on-one coaching call with a certified Queen's Code Workshop leader, which is normally $48, but you get it for free. And you can get coaching about the specific men or the specific challenges in your life. And the total value of the package is $1,110, but you get it for only $725, which is 35% or $385 off. I also want you to know that we only have satisfied customers, because if you aren't satisfied, we give you all of your money back. So if you give us 2 days of your life and participate fully, we will transform your relationship with men forever. And we're so sure of this that we have a 100% money back guarantee. So it's a tremendous value for an investment of only $725 or $751 with our payment plan. And we did the math for you. Our payment plan is only $3.57 a day, often less than something at Starbucks.
That's awesome. Adrienne, is there more? Because I just thought of something really important to tell them.
Well, if I can just tell them, if they go to registerunderstandmen.com, it'll take them right to the page with the dates that they can choose from, and then they register using the promo code AA-715 to get the package there. So again, it's
so when you select the workshop you want to register into, and whether it's a payment plan or paid in full, when you get to the checkout page, there'll be a place for a promo code, and that's where they want to put in AA-715, right?
Perfect.
And then you'll see the $124 come off. You'll see the adjustment to the way the payment plan works. It'll all happen automatically.
Yep. Thank you.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. Anything else?
No, thank you so much.
You're welcome. So another thing that – so there's the thing I really want to tell you and the thing that I got to tell you, which is that I'll be leading the Queen's Code workshop in Los Angeles on September 12th and 13th, and I will be bringing the distinctions of hunters and gatherers into the Queen's Code workshop. So we're going to be having a merger of these conversations in a way that we never have before, and I hope you'll join me. And the thing that I wanted to tell you just to help you between now and then is that one of the biggest mistakes that people make, and both men and women make this mistake, is that thinking that what will make something actionable is criticism. So this is the most common way that women attempt to motivate men to do something, is by criticizing them for not doing it. And it just doesn't work. It doesn't work, first of all, because men have 4 layers of protection against criticism that most women do not, and it actually starts at the biological level, but they have a way of handling criticism that causes them to consider it at many different levels before it becomes actionable. Whereas to a gatherer, criticism can cause us to act immediately. Criticism just throws us into action. So it's a part of the everything that makes something actionable is that we were criticized for not doing it. So that's one of the biggest mistakes that women make. And it has the additional cost of creating a tremendous amount of distance in your relationships. So it won't get anything done, and it will just have damage in your relationship. So this is another reason why it's really important to learn how to ask for what you need from a hunter in a way that inspires them and empowers them, in a way that taps into not only the human animal being compelled to provide for you, but the human spirit that does it with joy and generosity and with love. And I think that combination is what we have most powerfully been able to distinguish in the last 20 years, and I'm really proud of that. So what I'd like to do now is just see if someone has a question that they need to have answered to decide if the Queen's Code Workshop is something for you to spend the time and the energy and the resources on. If you would press 1 on your keypad, then it'll literally raise your hand here for me. Okay, Beth. All right, Beth, do you have the microphone? Are you there? Beth? You have the microphone. You might be muted on your side, but on my side, I can now hear you. Did you mute your phone? I'm so sorry to not connect. Your hand went up so fast with such enthusiasm. All right, so I'll check back if I can. And Cynthia, you have the microphone.
Yes. You know, you have really transformed my life with all this information. I'm 60 years old and have truly, I take this in like a sponge. I'm going to be at your workshop. I'm not sure if I'll get to the Los Angeles workshop, but it'll probably be the Atlanta one so that I can prepare and make sure that everything is, you know, in order before I leave. But I am so much enjoying you. This is like a prayer, an answered prayer to me. That's all.
Cindy, thank you so much for telling me that. That means a lot to me. And thanks for soaking it all in. It's really fun, actually, right?
Yes, that's awesome.
Thanks, Cynthia. And Marion, you have your hand up. You have the microphone. Are you there, Marion? You might be muted on your side, but you have the microphone over here.
Can you hear me?
No, I can. Hi.
Oh, good. Excellent. Hi. My husband is here listening with me, too. He thinks you are a goddess, which isn't a word he uses lightly.
Wow, that's really sweet.
He can't say enough about how you have helped him understand himself just from listening to the free stuff on your site. So my question is also about putting the logistics together about where to go. I'm in northern Michigan, so I have to, none of these jump out at me as, wow, how close this is. So I was wondering if there is any kind of expiration to this code, or if we register, if we get information about places to stay and all that kind of thing.
I'll let Adrian address the question of expiration in a moment. We'll provide the information for you of the hotel or facility where the workshop's being held, which is really easy to use, like Google for something, for example, if you wanted to stay someplace else. If you wanted to stay with a graduate in that area, we have a bulletin board on our website that you can use, and we also have understandmen.com on Facebook. So that isn't something that we arrange, but we have some really generous graduates who help people reduce the expenses of being in our workshops. And Adrian, what's the closest we would have to Michigan right now? Is it Chicago?
Several of our graduates from Michigan go to Toronto, and then New York is usually an affordable flight for them. And we have Toronto next April, and we have New York this fall. We'd love to have her in Dallas as well.
Thank you. That's terrific. I love that you have your graduates doing that too.
You're welcome. And Adrian, does the promo code have an expiration date?
No, this one does not. But if you want to get started and get the free bonus that you'll have access to, Allison's latest workshop, then you can register and then just pick a date far out. And then you can transfer to another date free of charge as long as you do it 46 days before the workshop, because we sign hotel contracts on the 45th day. So you can transfer free online.
Okay, that's great to know too. And also, am I right in seeing that in order for my husband and I to do a workshop together, which we thought would be fun, that we have to be graduates, that this is really the starting portal?
Well, you're correct in that, let me see if I can be clear. So to do the Understanding Women workshop, it's called the Queen's Code Challenge, Understanding Women, which is one you can do together, you have to have done the Queen's Code workshop, but he does not have to have done anything before that. And that is a huge expansion on the conversation about hunters and gatherers and how that affects us in so many parts of life, as well as the effect of being physically weaker and smaller, which has a tremendous impact on women's behavior. So you can do that after the Queen's Code. He can do it without having done anything. We also have a Heroes Challenge, which is a course just for men, and he doesn't have to have done anything before then. I'm leading that in October in Los Angeles, and Adrian, isn't a Heroes Challenge happening in the Midwest this fall? Isn't Pete leading it?
I think, yes, he's leading it in Columbus, Ohio on October 24th and 25th.
Yeah, so we have a Heroes Challenge actually much closer to your neck of the woods. In Columbus,
my
Ohio. Yeah, so that's and Adrian, can they use the promo code AA-715 for a discount on Heroes Challenge as well?
Yes, they can. So he can get the same discount by registering for Heroes Challenge.
Yeah, awesome.
Well, that's extremely awesome. It is extremely awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's how it would work. You can also do Dance of Partnership together, but you both need to have done the Queen's Code Challenge Understanding Women before that, so there's that additional prerequisite. So we have several courses that couples can do together, but your starting place definitely is the Queen's Code Workshop, and he can start at the Queen's Code Challenge or at the Heroes Challenge.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for those great questions. All right, so we have passed time. And Adrian, we could connect with Beth, and Daniela also has a question. If people have questions they need answered to decide when and where and how to do the workshop, is there can they just call customer care, or is there somewhere that they can email?
Well, they all got reminders for this call, so probably the easiest thing is they can reply to that and ask. And then they can also call customer care between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. Pacific tomorrow or any Tuesday through Friday. And that number is 1-800-418-9924.
Awesome.
And on our website, if they click Contact Us, they'll see all the ways to contact us.
Understandmen.com. Okay. So those, if you still have questions, please feel free to contact us. We're happy to answer them. And I'm going to go ahead and open up all the lines so we can say goodnight to each other. And thank you so much for the way you listened and participated. It was delightful for me, and I'm just really happy to have gotten to express this in this way. So thank you.